Welcome to the Asylum. And now, your hosts, Rick Flieger and Rick Briggs.
That's right. Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show at AsylumFantasySports.com, RFSportsRadio.com. If I can remember it all, Rick.
Yeah, that's true. And don't forget to check us out if you're in the greater New York City area. We're on Cablevision, channel 147 on the Fantasy Sports Network and MTS Cable in Manitoba, Canada.
On Twitter, get those keeper questions in, at Asylum Football.
That's right, and we are Flieger and Briggs. Drop us a line, asylumfootball@gmail.com, asylumfantasysports@gmail.com. And Rick, without further ado, let's bring in one of our favorite guests that we love to have on, especially in the preseason when things are warming up. We got Corey Parson. You know him on Twitter as at the Fantasy Exec. Corey, welcome.
What's going on, fellas? How's everything going? It's just about that time, so ready to talk some fantasy football.
Yeah, no time, no doubt, time to get down to it. Corey, the producer of the Roto Experts at the morning in the morning on SiriusXM. So, Corey, so much going on, hard to know where to start. You being up there in New York, one of the things I keep seeing, we'll just jump right into it here. Chris Johnson is a guy I am having an impossible time slotting. I don't know where to draft him. The news yesterday is that he's going to get a ton of work. They're going to pound the ball, and he's going to get all these carries. Now we're talking Chris Ivory getting third down and goal line carries. That comes out about a half an hour ago, or at least I read it a half an hour ago. You going anywhere near Chris Johnson? Do you trust him, or do you see him more in that LaDainian Tomlinson role when he went to the Jets?
You know, the thing about it is so funny. I was a guy that rode Chris Johnson last year when nobody wanted him. Now it seems like this year I don't want him. I just don't like to be attached to the New York Jets offense. This offensive line has issues, the young quarterback situation. They're going to run the football. He'll get you some work in the PPR. He can finish 24 or 25, but kind of the strategy that I'm putting together doesn't include Chris Johnson.
Yeah, he's one of those enigmas out there. In fact, on our site, we have individual rankings. Rick has him at 31. Right now I have him at 24, which is still low-end RB2. And I'm wavering on him myself. This Jets offense just does not thrill me.
No, they have better depth at wide receiver this year. Eric Decker, you know, the addition of Eric Decker. But still, the quarterback situation, they've been through, I couldn't even tell you how many offensive coordinators in the Rex Ryan era. It's just a place that fantasy owners just don't want to go comfortably.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, Mike Vick, Geno Smith, or do you just not care? Does that affect your opinion on him?
We quarterback two. Quarterback three.
Yeah. Any one better for Eric Decker or Chris Johnson, perhaps, I guess, would be the only reason that would matter from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, and the thing about Decker is going to get a lot of targets. He's going to be the number one guy out there. They want to play fast enough tempo with some speed. That's why you would bring guys like Johnson and Decker in. But, you know, it's going to be inconsistent. You're going to be pulling your hair out on Sunday trying to figure out if you should flex Eric Decker.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, one thing we mentioned, Rick and I were talking before we came on the air. Right now, especially with LaMichael James and Kendall Hunter, the injuries they've sustained, what's that do for you with Frank Gore and Carlos Hyde stock rising?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what you guys have seen. I draft so much. I just had to pull myself away from hitting, proceed on one a couple minutes ago, but I was able to hold off. Is the situation, I'm sorry, which player would you say again?
You know, Gore and Hyde. Hyde, yeah.
When it comes to drafts, I'm starting to see Carlos Hyde go before Frank Gore. And I do think that's a problem because everybody's always been down on Frank Gore, but he continues to be consistent and get it done every year. I mean, you're drafting him, sometimes I'm seeing him in the 7th, 8th, 9th round, sometimes even the 10th round, Frank Gore on one of the teams that run the football more than anybody else in the NFL. But I'd be honest with you, I just don't want to be that guy that jumps on him that year when he's terrible. I don't want to own Steven Jackson last year. So I'm waiting for Gore to go, and then, you know, if I go wide receiver heavy, then I'll grab Carlos Hyde because, like I said, the system dictates running the football, and if he gets a good share of the carries, a young man could be something special in that offense.
Yeah, no question. And you look at Frank Gore, he's so frustrating. This is probably the year, but I believe this is the fourth consecutive year I said it, that this is the year he shuts it down. I wouldn't be stunned if he comes out and gets 200 carries again this season.
I wouldn't be either.
Now, we talk about his age and so forth, and we turn around and we see there's 31-year-old Fred Jackson just got an extension with Buffalo. And, I mean, some of these guys seem to be timeless.
And also, I mean, they fit a role for the Buffalo. Fred Jackson fit a nice role for the Buffalo Bills. Spiller is the home run hitter. He's the one the fantasy owners tend to hate, but we can talk about that later. But Jackson, less work on his leg, even though he's getting up in age for a running back. He gets the extension kind of as an insurance policy for Spiller, even though Bryce Brown is getting a nice looking camp. But I just think those one of those guys where they want the Buffalo Bills, you know, had to have him in there, because they run the football a lot also, and they need depth at the running back position. So how great Sammy Watkins is, let me ask you guys a question. Everybody's in awe of what Sammy Watkins is doing right now at training camp, but can it dictate to the field during the regular season with E.J. Manuel at quarterback?
Yeah, and that's the concern. Watkins has all the tools and in the right offense, I think he'd be a star this year. But he's got a big, big E.J. Manuel problem. That's the problem he can't solve on his own.
And another point being, no one can deny the talent and physical skills of Larry Fitzgerald. And we saw what happened to him with John Skelton and some of those magnificent arms thrown to him for those couple of years in Arizona.
Yep. Yeah, so and the situation will, you know, It hinders it a little bit. Dynasty leaguers, you know, that's cool. But as far as Fred Jackson goes, just a piece of the puzzle, he's going to have some value at some point in the season. You're going to go to the waiver wire to pick up Fred Jackson. It always happens to happen that way.
Exactly. So I think we're obligated to, anytime you talk Buffalo Bills and talk fantasy football, you have to talk C.J. Spiller. Last year, big disappointment. A guy was going to the top 10 of drafts. Yeah, this year being had for a much better value, third. Sometimes I've seen him fall into fourth rounds. He's burned enough fantasy owners. At that value, is he a guy you trust? Do you think he finally fills that role, his potential that we think he could have? This guy being talked of has the skills to be a top five back, and it just doesn't ever work out. It's a guy I don't trust, and I avoid like the plague, and I wonder if I'm missing out on good value this year.
You know, I jump up and down and scream and yell about it every morning on the radio program. I'm not talking about Antonio Brown. I'm talking about C.J. Spiller and what a value he comes at this season. He played injured last year, and it still wasn't that bad. The guy still had some decent games. Whenever he would get rest and come back, he would put up a 100-yard performance, and he was breaking the long run. It wasn't consistent, didn't have as many touchdowns like the prolific year in 2012, but I'll strike 2013 off, and I think that he's the guy I'm targeting. That's the guy I'm in on this year, C.J. Spiller, especially in the third round. I think he's easy to catch 60 passes. They're splitting them out wide in camp. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean nothing right now, but, you know, you never know. I'm just being hopeful. But, you know, I like the situation, and he's a home run hitter, team that runs the football. So I'm in on C.J. Spiller. Fantasy owners hold grudges, and it's tough for them, not to say that you are, you know what I mean? But it's just tough for them to go back to a guy that hurt him so bad the season before.
Yeah, that's true. And I tell you what, I'm not quite as dubious, I guess, about C.J. Spiller as I am about a guy named Doug Martin, who actually is going still in the first round in a lot of the ADPs I'm looking at right now. I tell you what, first round, I'm not touching Doug Martin.
No, I'm not. It's not a part of my draft plan either, fella. I can't. Volume running back. And he may not get the volume this year. 2012 season, he had good games, rookie running back. You saw everything you liked, three down back, run excellent near the goal line. But it was a couple of big games that kind of offset that. Other than that, he was a guy that seemed, to my opinion, to be dependent on volume. And I try to stay away from guys like that. I want guys like Spiller that can do more with less. And it's you know, I just don't think that I'm just not touching Doug Martin. I would rather draft somebody that he'd be sharing carries with.
Yeah, no doubt about it, because you're obviously going to get more value there, and you don't know if he's healthy. And to be honest, you look back in that 2012 season, you break it down, most of those numbers, a crazy percentage of the numbers he put up came about in five or six games. had games, especially towards the year where he disappeared. Before he got hurt last year, he wasn't performing. This is a guy, I always got a Cadillac Williams vibe from him, to bring up a name from Tampa Pat. And I think we're seeing the same thing with Doug Martin. I don't have a lot of faith in Mike James or the other tools they have down there. I think they all fill a role, but I don't think you're going to see anybody emerge too much in terms of fantasy value.
No, I just think whoever that guy is, and whoever fantasy owners go out there and get, even if it's, you know, obviously Martin would be one of them unless he gets injured or something. But they may go get what I can't think of the name right now. I know Randy is one, and the other guy that you just mentioned. But what I feel is if at some point during the season, those running backs that he'll be sharing time with will be in the RB2 mix, because you're going to have to be picking off the waiver wire because of, you know, injury and disappointment and stuff like that. So, you know, that's where I see the value coming at from the Tampa Bay running game.
Right. You know, let's stick with running backs for a little bit longer here. I've been getting, you know, Rick and I have been getting a lot of questions concerning basically the three running backs that have switched teams and are obviously going to be buying for that number one spot, and that's Rashad Jennings moving to New York Giants, Gerhardt moving to Jacksonville, and of course Ben Tate going to Cleveland. Are you in on any of these? One of them, all three? Or are you just a little hesitant? What's your overall feel of these guys?
Jennings is interesting because I do feel like if he's going to get the workload, and what they're trying to do with that system now is spread it out a little bit. So, but I think it's going to take the Giants a little bit of time to adjust to that new offense. Everything out of training camp, for the most part, says that the offense is struggling and that they're behind. Don't get me wrong, Eli Manning is brilliant, and he'll figure out a way to get it looking good throughout the course of the season. But I'm just not in on the Giants' offense. But he's going to have opportunities, you know, to score touchdowns, catch a few passes for you. Just not a guy that's on my radar. The Giants' O-line, the issues with trying to learn a new system, is not something I'm really want to invest in.
How about Tate? And I'm just looking at ADPs, you know, right before the show, and they're all within about five picks of each other, right about at the end of the second and beginning of the third round.
Yeah, that's where they're going. And Tate is a talented runner, and when he's healthy, he's going to field, and he's going to get the opportunity. And then you never know what kind of offense they implement, you know, with both of their quarterbacks. Even though Hoyer's coming off that ACL tear, and they'll figure out a way to get Johnny Football in there some kind of way, and that should open up running lanes. But Tate's not a guy that I'm really all that high on and never have been. The talent is there. When he plays well, when he plays well when he's motivated, and I think it seems like he is that this year coming in to the situation in Cleveland. But I think Terrence West is really pushing him out there in Browns camp, and I think the timeshare will be enough to meet a pass on Ben Tate also.
Yeah, he's a guy that makes me nervous. Let's stick there in Cleveland a minute. We'll get away from fantasy football. When you talk about Johnny Football, the Johnny Manziel, I am just so sick and tired of hearing about this kid's personal life and his lack of focus and professionalism. And what I get stuck on, Corey, Johnny Manziel reminds me a lot of you. Young, good-looking, a pile of money, world-famous. Can you blame the kid for going out and partying a little bit?
Trust me and Johnny Manziel live two totally different lives. But, hey, I'm in Manziel's shoes. He doesn't have a filter. He doesn't care. That's why he was never going to be good for the NCAA. He had to get out of there because he wasn't buying in. He was signing autographs. He was like, I don't care. He already came from, you know, a pretty established family background. So he's a wild spirit, and he looks at it as if he's bigger than the NFL and he doesn't need it. He's not appreciative yet. He hasn't slept on the park bench, so he needs to get some sacks and get some interceptions thrown and have a couple boos, and that'll get his act together.
And you look at it, what my issue is, it's such the headline constantly, week in and week out, day after day. You have the owners coming out. You got Joe Montana come out. This kid hasn't taken a snap yet in a preseason game. I have to wonder if most of these guys, a lot of these guys, aren't partying just as hard and having just as much fun and living the life. It's just they're not Johnny Manziel and they don't see themselves in the headlines. It just drives me insane. I almost have to feel for the kid. I watched Ray Rice drag his unconscious wife out of an elevator, and he seems to be under less scrutiny than Johnny Manziel does right now.
Yo, this is exactly true. You're absolutely correct on that point. It's just, I think Johnny has to, because of how tough it is on him and how everything he does is scrutinized, his circle needs to be a little bit tighter. It shouldn't be every time Johnny Manziel step out of the house, something going on Instagram. That's too much because they're watching for that because he's got people in his circle that he probably doesn't need to have. So I think he's a good kid. I can't really knock what he's doing. He just has to be a little bit smarter about it, in my opinion.
Yeah, we talked about this on previous shows. It's and I'm sure you guys have too, but you know, you almost akin him to guys like Joe Namath, Mickey Mantle, and so forth. But back then, there wasn't a camera behind every tree trying to bring you down. I mean, these guys were out swinging and having a great time and carousing around. And they were basically, you know, made into heroes over the whole situation. Where Manziel, they're just trying to find anything. And not only Manziel, a lot of these other guys out here doing the same things. Just somebody trying to bring them down so they get a little notoriety.
Do you think if it was Twitter and Facebook and social media and everybody had a camera phone 20 years ago that we'd have been looking at Derek Jeter and Johnny Manziel as being basically the same guy?
Oh, I think no question about it. Only Derek Jeter, a much better quality of women from the few pictures I've seen.
Yeah, Johnny Manziel still got the co-ed. Derek Jeter had women.
he had some real women. There's a lesson we could all learn from Derek Jeter. So let's bring it back to football here a little bit. You look at a guy, you know, when you're picking, I got a lot of drafts coming up, and it seems like in every one of them I'm picking in the 7, 8, 9 spot. Which is
a bad spot to be this year.
It's just right flat in Marshawn Lynch territory, and I'm scared of this holdout. I'm scared of him. This guy, Corey, is in fact crazy enough to retire. He's just a little wacky. And it makes me nervous, and I have a hard time. I don't know what to do with that pick, and I don't know what to think of the Marshawn Lynch situation.
Nah, I'm staying away. All the news in the offseason has been negative. The fact now you bring the whole lot on top of that. They're talking like, look, he's supposed to be here. He signed the contract. It's, you know, the glisten is off the Super Bowl, beast mode, Skittles, everything. It's business now. And he's holding out, and they got two young running backs that can play football. And they're fine with going with those two young guys in the season. I think Seattle takes a hard stand. Marshawn Lynch eventually does come in my opinion, but when players hold out and they come back, immediately they tear a hamstring and get hurt. Something happens. It's some kind of karma with players when they hold out that I'm like to stay away from. So I'm not touching Marshawn Lynch. I saw some results recently of an NFFC draft. He went 3-8. Everybody's off of Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, and you hit on an excellent point. It especially running backs, they hold out from training camp. It's a hamstring, it's a back, it's always something because they're just not ready, and they have to go from holding out to at this accelerated level, and they just, and a body just can't do that. And I agree with you 100%. I'm staying away from him. Now, a couple of years ago, when we, I don't know when it was, 2-3 years ago, when we first started talking, you kind of coined a little phrase like the Holy Trinity of running backs. Now, who are your three this year?
I think we got four this year. And everybody knows who the four are. It's the four at the top of the board. But I got the way I view running backs is I got guys that I draft throughout the course of the draft that I like in certain spots and stuff like that. But the top four is Shady McCoy, Jamaal Charles, Matt Forte, and Adrian Peterson. You can almost flip them any kind of way you want. I think Shady's locked in at number one overall. And if I was to have the first pick in the draft, I would take LeSean McCoy. If I had the second pick, I would take Calvin Johnson, though. No.
You're taking Calvin Johnson that high?
Over Jamaal Charles?
Yeah. I would take him over Jamaal Charles.
Hey, you've been talking to Farrell, I think.
So cold in the B, Detroit.
So let's get back to me and my quandary in the number seven spot. Another guy I got my eye on, Monty Ball. I mean, you look at what No'Shawn Moreno did, a previously very disappointing back with Peyton Manning, what that Denver offense is doing. Something isn't sitting right with me with Monty Ball. His complete inability to hold on to the ball. He loves to fumble. It's his favorite thing to do. Is this a guy, is he being overdrafted? Is he being underdrafted, getting him that low in the first round? This is another guy I'm having a tough time putting my finger on.
Yeah, and I agree with you also. listen, what everybody says sounds excellent. But when I tell fantasy owners is, when you start talking about drafting Monty Ball in the first round, just get a pen in the pad and write down how many yards you think he's going to run for, how many touchdowns he's going to have, and how many passes he's going to catch. And last season, Sean Moreno had an unbelievable year. And if he was to duplicate what Sean Moreno did last season, but you know, looking up his numbers right now, he had on 20 to 41 carry, averaged 4 yards a carry, you know, scored 10 touchdowns. He also caught 60 passes, scored 3 touchdowns. So more or less you're talking about almost 1,500 yards of production with double-digit touchdowns and 60 receptions. If that's what you think Monty Ball is going to do, you need to draft him at number one. And I just don't see it, so I don't see a situation where I would have Monty Ball unless he slipped to me in the second round. But the industry is in love with Monty Ball right now because of the fact that he's attached to that offense. But he would have to have a big year to meet that first-round value.
Yeah, it's true. But one thing that I've been taking notice of is it's right now it's basically him and Ronnie Hillman. Ronnie Hillman can't hold on to the football any better than he can, and another negative against him is he cannot pass protect, and they will not let Peyton Manning get hit. And I mean, almost by default, I think Monty Ball gets a ton of work.
No, he gets it because he gets it because he's in the situation, but I just don't know if the numbers are going to be there throughout the course of 16 games. He finished strong last season, but Moreno is what he would need to be drafted at 7 overall, and I don't think he's going to be that. I think the guy will run for 1,000 yards, and I do think he scores double-digit touchdowns. I don't think he's that big a factor in the passing game as Moreno is, though. And I worry about him also with protecting Peyton Manning. You know, he's working on that in camp right now. He has to get better at that. Nelson Moreno is one of the best blocking backs in the NFL.
And they may need that in Miami as well from everything that's going on
the
offensive line.
And that's why I think he plays in Miami. Even though everybody loves Lamar Miller, that offensive line is shaky. If they can get him healthy, he's going to sit back there and block. And, you know, maybe he does well in Chip Kelly's system. I hate to take you guys off topic, but did you hear where they think that Lamar Miller in this system could be as good as LeSean McCoy?
I've heard this coming out today, and I was when Rick was in Miami. That was going to be my follow up. We're not going to fall for the Lamar Miller thing again, are we?
No, I can't. Fantasy owners, no, don't do it. A fantasy owner will tell you that guy. You forget about it. Don't believe anything that's going on in camp right now.
I believe we named a show by the name of that title one time. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, just don't.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
And you saw Lamar Miller, you saw David Wilson. We saw these guys go in ADPs from 7 to 3 in about a 2-week stretch in August, and none of that paid off. So I want to swing back to something you said there, Corey. If you had that number 2 pick, let's go back to that. You have that number 2 pick, you take Calvin Johnson. It's a lot of debate we have with a lot of listeners, a lot of callers, a lot of other guests. So you go ahead and you take that wide receiver early in the first round. What's your strategy for the next few rounds after that?
I'm going to draft when I come back around on the turn, and we're looking at 212. I'm at that point. I mean, Gio Bernard would have to fall to that point, or DeMarco Murray would have to fall to that point for me to draft a running back. If not, I'm drafting the best wide receiver on the board. And then when I come back to start the third, if C.J. Spiller's there, I'll draft C.J. Spiller. But if not, I'll draft another wide receiver because I think I think running back is deeper with timeshares, and I think you want to lock up heavy targeted wide receivers. When you're playing the PPR, you want to lock up heavy targeted wide receivers, and you can't go wrong starting with Calvin Johnson because the running backs are too shaky. They all look good on paper. They're all great. I mean, McCoy is too big of a part of the offense to pass up, and Peterson is probably going to have a monster season playing under North Turner. But I can get value in the running backs in 4, 5, and 6. And 1, 2, and 3, I want the best wide receivers.
Do you look at, of course, he's probably gone by the time it gets back to you. How early do you go on a Jimmy Graham?
probably I would consider on the turn. But the interesting thing about Jimmy Graham is, and this is something that I love in the recent 3 years in fantasy football, how everybody touts Jimmy Graham as a tight end that's going in the first round, and a tight end, you know, he's a kid, the first round ADP, and he's the best thing since tight end position was created. All that is great. I understand that, and it sounds good. But when you get in the draft, and it's August 23rd or it's August 28th, and it's getting down to the wire, and people are drafting teams, they're about to play fantasy football with Jimmy Graham, and he's 2-6, 2-7, 2-12, 3-1, 3-4, because nobody likes – everybody's afraid to take a gamble to start their team like that. So if you want Jimmy Graham, you when it gets close time to draft day, you'll be able to get him in the second round if you want him. And I like a pass catcher like Jimmy Graham. I would take him, but I would want – a stud wide receiver up top, especially on that turn, and I probably would try to grab two. So I don't see Grant being on any of my teams unless he does unless he does that late August draft dip that he always does.
Yeah, and my concern with Jimmy Graham, you hear the argument, we hear it all the time, that you're basically drafting him as a number one, as a high-end wide receiver. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's the same reason I will not draft a quarterback early. Injuries, obviously, always a part of the game. This is a position where you start one guy. If you take that draft pick early on, take him number one overall, and he goes down, there's no recovering from that. I'm going to draft a lot more running back depth, a lot more receiver depth than I obviously am at tight end or quarterback. And in a lot of cases, I don't carry two of either. I don't see you being able to recover from that, and that's why you see in these mocks now, and I agree with you, he's going about 1-8, 1-9, 1-10. He probably will dip into the early second round. Even then, that's a little high unless I have a real big piece ahead of him and I'm feeling good coming back down. You can't recover from it if you lose one of these guys.
No, and like you say, you nailed it. It's tough because if they go down, then it's hard to replace. You cannot – you may every season, maybe one or two at the most tight ends will come off the waiver wire. It just doesn't happen. So, but with that being said, something I've been doing recently, like you guys' opinion on it, is I've been drafting two, sometimes three tight ends, but I take my tight ends in more non-traditional rounds. Like I'll come out with Greg Olsen and Dennis Pitter, or I'll come out with Dennis Pitter and Kyle Rudolph. I'm starting to get two tight ends in back-to-back rounds just because those heavily targeted tight ends, you know, in most PPR leagues you can flex them. How do you guys feel about that little mix in the middle with Pitter, Olsen, and Rudolph? And I guess you can throw Jordan Reed in there, but I kind of know what you feel about Jordan Reed already.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just had an auction draft last weekend, and one of the guys, that's what he does. He targets a bidding high on tight ends, and he's starting Jordan Cameron and Jordan Reed in the flex, so you know, that strategy is starting to expand a little bit.
Yeah. So it's something I've, for the most part, have fiddled with going into this season because I look back on teams in the past and I always think, wow, if this team just had a tight end, we could have been able to do something. And what I notice is it's difficult to find tight ends on the waiver wire. But you can find a wide receiver on the waiver wire. You may not find Keenan Allen or Victor Cruz, but you know, there's guys on the waiver wire throughout the course of the season. And you can even get some pretty decent guys late if you want to take that gamble because another player that always, 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 always overlooked on draft day is Brian Hartline. And he'll just go out and catch 70 passes and play 16 games.
Exactly. I got him, I think, for $3 in an auction league. And, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But, I took him without hesitation. On tight ends, we talk about Jimmy Graham and so forth. Now, we only play one normally, other than what we were just talking about. But you only play one. You can get a Heath Miller. You can get Greg Olsen. You can get Kyle Rudolph way down in the draft. That's one reason why I don't like to go, second round for a tight end, even though Jimmy Graham, I know, is head and shoulders production-wise above them. But, Greg Olsen, very solid last year, and I think he's even higher this year because they're all – unknown to Cam Newton, these receivers.
No, you know what? It's interesting that you say that. And Olsen, I tell you what, I don't think Greg Olsen has missed a game in 3 years. He's extremely durable, and nobody even knows about it. He plays 16 games. He catches 70 passes. He brings his lunch pail. He's there to bail Cam Newton out in every given situation, and he is a nice, excellent fit in that offense. Even with Smith going, I still think Olsen is the guy you want to target. But you know how we were talking about Lamar Miller earlier? I tell you a name that's starting to come up now down in Panthers camp, and that is Ed Dixon. And Ed Dixon is flashing in camp right now. And Ed Dixon is, you know, may start to see some targets that were intended for Greg Olsen. But us fantasy owners know that Ed Dixon is going to be the first guy you cut, because Ed Dixon, much like Lamar Miller, does not get it done for fantasy owners.
Nah, he'll disappear, he'll get injured. And look, what you got to factor in with Greg Olsen, an uncanny ability to get away with just horrific offensive pass interference penalties. Never draws a flag. Yeah, you know, one thing, and we'll use it to transition into the wide receivers a little bit. I think the argument, too, if you find these tight ends, even if they're not the big-name high-end tight ends, it's becoming such a part of NFL offenses. You're dealing with high volumes, high catch volumes in your PPR formats. A guy's name jumping to wide receivers now that you brought up earlier that you're having debates on your show about being Antonio Brown. This is a guy, I think the Steelers' offense is going to be pretty high power. That defense being as bad as it is, they're going to have to score some points. Antonio Brown, I think, is probably the best value. When you talk about Calvin Johnson, Demaryius Thomas, Dez Bryant all going in the first round, and the litany of them going in the second round, Antonio Brown's going after all these guys, sometimes slipping into the early third round. I think it's the guy that finished right up five again.
It is absolutely the most ludicrous thing in fantasy football. I do not understand it. And when I say it, people look at me like I'm crazy. He is disrespected. He is the most underrated player in fantasy football. He's going to catch 115 passes this season. Todd Haley develops wide receivers, and Antonio Brown fits the mold perfectly. Now, I understand that everybody hates Todd Haley, but look at what he does with wide receivers. If he's got one in Brown, he's got a young developing Wheaton on the other side. They're going to be doing more no-huddle looks this year. They got an excellent running back in Le'Veon Bell. That offense started to click last season when Roethlisberger called Le'Veon Bell out. That's going to be a potent offense, and fantasy owners are going to want to have a piece of that offense. And I like Bell, and I love Antonio Brown. I think Antonio Brown should be a first-round draft pick. But if I start a draft at two, and I have Calvin, and I come back around, and Antonio Brown is there, that's going to be my second-round draft pick.
Yeah, and that would be a wise move. I agree with you 100%. You know, Ben Roethlisberger, to his credit, was the 10th highest scoring quarterback last year, fantasy wise.
Excellent.
Nobody pays
excellent value.
Yeah, and you have Antonio Brown, Heath Miller, a year removed from that comeback from that knee injury. I think he's going to be 100%. And you know, I tell you what, with that Bell blunt punch in the running game, man, I tell you what, I think they're going to score a boatload of points.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. That system they got on offense, what Ben and Todd Haley are doing, they're going to get that football in the air, and they got an excellent guy in Le'Veon Bell in the backfield also. They're going to be able to get up and down the field, and fantasy owners, once again, Ben Roethlisberger is there. He's for round 13, 14, 15. You can wait on your quarterback to round 14 and grab Ben Roethlisberger. I would not walk away from the draft table with my head down.
No, I think you're feeling good there. You can pair him up with another guy I'm high on this year. Other people aren't so warm on him. But Jay Cutler's a guy with Alshon Jeffrey, with Brandon Marshall, with Matt Forte doing what he can do. If Jay Cutler can stay upright and can stay healthy, I think this is another guy can be had down in that same area, and I'd be happy having him start week in and week out.
No, the combination of the Bears quarterback last year would have finished as QB5. So, you know, Cutler, McCown, you know, this is a journeyman, Josh McCown, a journeyman, Hammond Egger, and he did wonderful things. I like to call him quarterback whisperer, Mark Trestman. He gets Cutler, who has NFL talent, big arm, excellent targets on the outside. It just doesn't seem to happen for fantasy for Jay Cutler, though, and I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't happen again this year. He gets injured, he misses time. And guess what? I'm still going to draft him and take a gamble on him. You got to take risks to win in fantasy football. 9th, 10th round, Cutler represents the value attached to that offense. I'm in on it. But I'm going to get me another quarterback to back him up quick, maybe Ben Roethlisberger.
Right. I think if you pair those two together, that could be a combination week in, week out. You can play some matchups. You can plan both of those guys going to get injured. So talking about that and this value you can have in terms of quarterbacks late, when do you start looking at a guy like Aaron Rodgers, a Peyton Manning, a Drew Brees? These guys aren't going to be on my team because I'm not going to spend those first two-round draft picks. Where do you start looking at these guys?
I mean, it would have to be excellent. Build my team. I really don't build my teams around a quarterback. I'm trying to wait it out. I'm looking, you know, if I can get Ryan in 10 or 11, if I can sneak RG in the 8th, something like that, I'll jump on that. If I have Calvin, I may pull early, maybe 6 or 7 for Matthew Stafford. If Calvin's on my team, I like to pair wide receivers up. But wide receiver and the quarterback up, because those points are big down the stretch. But if for the most part, I am late on quarterback, Rodgers, Manning, you know, well, not Brady, obviously. I won't touch him. I wouldn't touch him in the 20th. You know, Rodgers, Manning, Brees, the big fantasy quarterbacks. I won't own any of them.
Yeah, other than your love for Tom Brady, I mean, there's so much, you know, you've got Andy Dalton, Carson Palmer. You know, that you guys, you can get near the end of drafts. Roethlisberger, we brought up. Tony Romo, we haven't brought up. He always goes late. He's, you know, he's always dogged. You know, he always loses the big one. Who cares? This is fantasy.
He's still for 5,000 yards, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, he's an excellent fantasy quarterback. That team, a Cowboys fan, that team is going to be losing games 50-45. And Tony Romo's going to be out there slinging it. Scott Linehan, Dez Bryant, DeMarco Murray. That you want a piece of the Dallas Cowboys offense for fantasy. And if you're playing in a daily game, you want a piece of their defense.
Yeah, go ahead and play that matchup. So you've got me feeling a little bad about myself right now, Corey. I've got Tom Brady ranked 7th right now in my quarterback ratings. I am expecting a comeback from him, a little bit of rapport. I like the Brandon LaFell signing. If Gronk comes back, I like what he can do. Where does this Tom Brady hatred come from?
It's running the football, and it's trying to, you know, when Gronk is there, you're going to get the 25-point weeks when Gronk is there. I just don't see Rob. It's too much attached. The value of Tom Brady is directly attached to Rob Gronkowski, and that's not a good thing. I know why fantasy owners love him, because when he's in the lineup, you can count on him scoring a touchdown. But the guy has not been able to be available to fantasy owners on Sunday too consistently, and I'm not buying it. When I see him go in the second round, I'd be like, well, that was a mistake right there. And I think with Tom Brady throws 25 touchdown passes, I can see that. They're going to run the football.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And we're sticking with wide receivers, and just for a minute, I'm just appalled to me, and maybe I'm
appalled.
The one in the wrong. Appalled. It's a word. Trust me. Going 506 right now, Roddy White. And here's a guy, he was injured last year. You talk about fantasy owners having a grudge and short memories. You know, he was injured last year, and it was a big disappointment. But up until that point last year, he had never missed a game. And I'm looking for him to come back with a storm this year.
I mean, up until last season, Roddy White, 16 games, 100 catches.
Yep.
Put it in the bank. This year, he hurt fantasy on his feeling last year, and now he's getting drafted behind T.Y. Hilton. I don't get it. Let it go. Let it go, fantasy owners. That's Roddy White. That's still Roddy White. That's still Matt Ryan. That's still Dirk Cotter. That's Julio Jones on the other side. That's still that guy, a healthy Roddy White in the 5th round. That's, you should put a ski mask on. That's I don't get, no. And you can get him as a wide receiver 3. Wait, if you draft wide receiver heavy, you can get him as a wide receiver 3. I'm all in for that. Let his ADP stay right where it's at.
Yeah, boy, you're not kidding, because I'll be stocking up.
And somebody I'm willing to pay a lot more than that for, Julio Jones. I have this guy ranked number 3 right now. Assuming he stays healthy, I think this kid is set to tear up the league, and I think there's every possibility he surpasses Calvin Johnson, Antonio Brown, all these guys, and he can finish as the number 1 fantasy wide receiver this season.
Oh, last year he was on pace. He was caught 170 passes last year. I mean, he was having a phenomenal season in 3 weeks until he got hurt, and he comes back. He's looked excellent in camp. They did a special surgery to get the foot reconstructed correctly. He's a workout warrior. He's out there. That offense, they can get some blocking up front. that would go right back to 2012 form for the Atlanta Falcons offense. You want Julio, you want Matt Ryan, you want Roddy White, and I think you want the young running back, Devonta Freeman, also.
So you see Freeman taking over that number one gig from Steven Jackson and having a big enough role to be fantasy relevant?
Yeah, I think he was going to push him anyway. Now with the hamstring injury, they're not saying he's going to be back until week one. Yeah, I mean, I really think that they're in that huddle, they're in those old coaches meeting right now, and they're saying to each other, Freeman's going to be our running back. And the thing about Freeman is he doesn't have to worry about what Monty Ball has to worry about. Freeman is excellent, excellent in pass protection. Come out of Florida State University, he loves the block. That's what he said when he was at the combine. And rookie running back, you got to be able to protect the passer, and Freeman can do that. And being able to protect the passer, he's going to be rewarded by getting those touches. He's playing behind a 31-year-old beat-up Steven Jackson. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and if this kid clicks, and, you know, I'm all with you. I mean, we're looking at Matt Ryan last year, you know, saying, oh, they had a bad year. Well, they did have a bad year. We understand that. But Julio Jones, that Roddy White was out. Harry Douglas showed up with 85 catches and over 1,000 yards. I mean, this is Harry Douglas. This ain't no Julio Jones and Roddy White.
Yeah, this offense can get it done.
I'm sorry, sir.
Excuse me, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, we're here.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me?
There you are.
Sorry.
That's okay. We thought we lost connection there. I guess you did too. So, but
yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know if you heard everything, but I mean, with Julio Jones back and Roddy White, yeah, I just see Atlanta just like you said, just own them all at the line.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's fantasy offense you want a piece of.
Yeah, no question. So looking around the league again, one guy who drives me insane, I see him going in the top 12 of wide receivers again. And, Corey, I just haven't seen it yet. It's Randall Cobb. He's a guy I avoid. He's a guy I'm consistently not recommending. I've been right for the most part so far. I know he got banged up a little bit last year. I think this is the guy that's continually being overdrafted. And what are your feelings on Randall Cobb?
It's the Packers offense, 100 catches, and that's the allure of Randall Cobb. Score some touchdowns also, game-breaking ability. But I just think there's better players on the board. I throw this question out to you. You're on the clock, and you're in the third round, and you're looking at Randall Cobb and Andre Johnson. Which one are you taking?
Andre Johnson all day.
Randall Cobb's ADP is higher. It's better players a little bit further down the board. So I don't think Randall Cobb doing any of my fantasy teams. Now, the guy across from Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, I welcome Jordy Nelson to any of my fantasy teams with open arms.
Why the difference in feelings in both of them? Because, you know, Aaron Rodgers does spread it around a lot.
Yeah, but Jordy Nelson is still the guy in that offense that you want to have in that passing game. Jordy Nelson is going to get the most targets. He's going to score the most touchdowns. He has the best chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. And even last season, in a year where Rodgers didn't play seven games, Jordy Nelson was still finished as a wide receiver one.
Yeah, so it's another guy. You know, he had that one big season and some injuries, and he tailed off a little bit. A guy I'm not real high on. To the same point, I think I see them guys go back-to-back a lot or within three or four picks of each other. I feel like similar to with Randall Cobb, there's other guys around him that I trust better. You know, a guy who's gotten forgotten, we've talked a lot about the short memories and the hard feelings fantasy owners get. Jeremy Maclin just wowing everybody in training camp. And this is a guy that could be had extremely cheap, and I think this is somebody who emerges as a number one fantasy wide receiver when the dust settles at the end of the year.
That's a big year for Jeremy Maclin to be number one fantasy wide receiver. He won a lot of championships. If drafted accordingly and properly, I just don't see it with Jeremy Maclin. And he's not going to play 16 games. It's just, and I know he doesn't play 16 games. He stays injured. I like what he can do in Chip Kelly's offense, and he's looking very good in training camp. And like you said, I can criticize fantasy owners for being that guy that can't give up on players, but Jeremy Maclin, I just have never seen it. He's, in my opinion, you know, he's anti-Antonio Brown. He is, I think he's always been overrated because of what he can do possession-wise in the PPR. But the injuries and the fact of it could have been an Eagle quarterback situation. Maybe the system didn't fit him right, but it just seemed like he underachieved a lot to me.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And you know, that kind of reminds me, you brought up underachieving. One of the guys to me that I think is always overdrafted simply because he can't stay in the field is Percy Harvin. Now, we all know what he can do, and he can, you know, break a game wide open, but you may only have him for five games.
No, he doesn't. I don't think he enjoys playing football. I don't understand why Tennessee on this draft Percy Harvin. He's not going to play. You know, he may play a couple of games, he'll get hurt. He'll play a couple more games, he'll get hurt. Then he'll run a kickback in the Super Bowl. Percy Harvin, his injury concerns, he's always been an underachiever, also is a disappointment, and won't be on any of my fantasy teams because those weeks you get from Harvin, if you get to a point where you're dependent on those, you're in trouble.
Yeah, and that's the concern with him. You don't have anything long term. So Corey, we're getting towards the end here. I think we're required by law as a fantasy show to talk about some sleepers, some potential busts. But let's start with sleepers. Some guys we're not talking about. Some guys we haven't seen. Some guys that you're high on this year that you think are going to make a difference or maybe bust out.
Yeah, I'll start with Justin Hunter. Out in Tennessee. Tim Wiggins in charge of that offense right now, flashing in training camp right now, looking very good. Jake Locker is going to make an attempt to get him the football. Both young wide receivers in Tennessee are guys that I would target in the middle round of the draft. Justin Hunter can go up and get it. Very athletic young man, and I think he's primed for, I don't want to say an Alshon Jeffrey type season, but I do think he's a guy that's going to have a fairly good season. And, I don't know what's wrong with me tonight, but it's been a long day. But I can see both of them young men in Tennessee having a very good season. Kendall Wright last season caught 94 passes.
Do you think that offense and Jake Locker are good enough to support two fantasy-relevant wide receivers?
I think you'll get different type of games from both. I think what you'll get from Wright is the more steady receiver who can catch 80 passes, and I think they're going to get down the football field with Justin Hunter.
Yeah, somebody, we'll stick with Tennessee, then we'll get back to sleepers. I'm intrigued just with Ken Wisenhunt being in camp and the Titans bringing in Dexter McCluster and what a coach like Wisenhunt could do with a guy like that. This might be a guy, if I'm in the 15th, 16th round of a deeper league that I'm in, that I might want to stick at the end of my bench. Wisenhunt's going to find a way to use this kid. I don't know if he's going to get enough touches, have enough opportunity, but I could see – there's something that intrigues me about Dexter McCluster under Ken Wisenhunt.
No, I agree. I'm drafting Dexter McCluster. Took him in the 16th round of a draft I did earlier this week. He's going to catch the football. If Dexter McCluster catches 50 passes and you get him in the 16th round and you build your team around wide receivers and you draft a guy like that in the 16th round, that's an RB2 on your team. That's excellent value right there, and I think it's going to happen. It happened with Danny Woodhead last year. He's another guy who's tricked fantasy owners. He'll trick me again this year, McCluster. I agree with you 100% on that.
A couple of sleepers maybe just to look at just out of circumstances. You got Cecil Shorts gone, Justin Blackmon gone, Ace Sanders suspended. There's two rookies at Jacksonville drafted, Allen Robinson out of Penn State and Marquise Lee. They both look very good, and obviously they're getting first-team reps all through camp.
Yeah, they're getting first-team reps. Both of those young men will have fantasy value. I think Lee is a little bit better of a player than his comrade on the other side is right now, but I do think both of those guys will hold some fantasy value, especially in the PPR.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, anything that you can get on the cheap from Jacksonville that's fantasy relevant, you take because there's not much.
You got to fill in those bye weeks and those injuries, and those guys like that make your roster a little bit deeper.
Yeah, talking about Jacksonville, where do you stand on Toby Gerhart?
I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see the offensive line being good enough to support that type of running game to be drafted in the 5th, 6th round. You know, it's no Adrian Peterson in front of him now. It's his job. As a matter of fact, there's nobody behind him now. It's on him going against sack fronts, with that offensive line that is not is one of the breakouts, one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. I like what his talent level is and what he can do and what people think the role is going to be. I'm just not taking the gamble on that guy when I think there's some value some other places on the board.
Yeah, and I think one place that you can find value right now, and of course I think the secret's starting to get out of the bag as far as him rising ADPs, Pierre Thomas. Is his job in New Orleans with Sproles out of there. Ingram's not going to be catching any passes, and I'm not convinced that, Tavares Cadet is going to be, take Darren Sproles' role. So I really like Pierre Thomas going into this year. Unfortunately, I think his ADP is starting to fall, more accordingly than what it was earlier.
Yeah, I think as we get deep into August, people are going to realize he caught 77 passes last year. And that's going to blow their mind when they see that. And I'm getting him. I don't think I have a team that does not have Pierre Thomas on it right now. I draft him in every single draft, and where I try to figure out what I'm going to do is when I'm on the clock and Pierre Thomas and Shane Marino are both there. If I'm on the turn, I might even take both, but those two running backs I'm definitely high on this season.
Yeah, you mentioned Alfred Morris. Why is it simply the lack of catch passing? Oh, let's try that again.
Yeah, pass catching
for our English speaking friends. That in ADP leagues, as most leagues go ADP, why is this guy fallen so far? This was a guy that was taken in the first, second round turn last season, had a decent little year, and he's fallen to the third and fourth round turn going into this year.
You're speaking about Alfred Morris, correct?
Right.
Yep. The problem with Alfred Morris. Let me not say that problem with Alfred Morris. I don't have a problem with Alfred Morris. If I see Alfred Morris sitting around in the third or fourth round, I'm going to go grab him because 2,800 yards, 20 touchdowns, and has played every single snap. And no matter what you say about Jay Gruden and the offense, and they're going to be airing it out, and they're going to do this, just like you say Monty Ball's going to fall into the end zone 10 times, so can Alfred Morris. If they get that system down and they're building around RG, Alfred Morris is having another big season, and he's going for a steal right now. And that's why I say I don't draft Jamaal Charles and Matt Forte because I get the big wide receivers because his depth in rounds 4, 5, and 6 and running back Reggie Bush is being drafted in the fifth round of drafts. I mean, that's 60 catches right there. Joey Bell will catch 50 passes. So I'm looking for pass-catching running backs and young running backs. I don't draft Frank Gore's and Steven Jackson's and Maurice Jones-Drew's and Darren McFadden's.
Yeah, exactly. Especially like in PPR formats where you can get your Joik Bells, your Danny Woodheads, and get mm-hmm. like that, on the cheap when you're paying for these other guys that, they'll maybe get more rushing yards and more rushing attempts, but the pass catching yards, even things out and you're getting much better value with these guys. Joik Bell had 1,200 total yards last year.
I mean, the PPR football has changed. PPR football and the advent of, and the way the NFL is going to passing football, it's changed. It's basically set a new trend in fantasy football. And, everything was, get those first big two running backs up early and often in the draft. And then you come out that those first two rounds and you have like, you come out with a tandem like Le'Veon Bell and see a guy like Marshawn Lynch. Yeah, you have one running back when you're leaving premium wide receivers on the board. Guys that are going to catch 100 passes like Pierre Garçon, they get left on the board and owners draft that second running back, I don't understand that. Because it's all about the points. You only have to start two running backs. In most leagues, we start three wide receivers. Why not get the three best? Get you a solid running back, but also, the way I look at it, it's depth at running back because so many teams deploy shared backfields.
Right, and that's trend where we're going. And sticking with wide receivers before we get out of here, a guy I think is being terribly overdrafted. I've heard good arguments both ways. Wonder where you are on Cordell Patterson. This is a guy who caught some buzz last year, maybe got overdrafted a little bit, was disappointing in a disappointing offense for the Vikings, and now this guy, I think, going ahead as a lot more solid, a lot safer options right now.
Yeah, you look at the North Turner effect, and everybody's, this can be this season's Josh Gordon. But this is still a raw talent in Patterson. He doesn't run crisp routes. They have to get him the football in space, and he makes things happen. And that does have some value, not in the third round, not in the fourth round. In the fifth, sixth round, I can see it. Not where he's going right now, but if you want to fall in love with a North Turner, somebody in a North Turner system at wide receiver, why not hop down to round 11 or 12 and take Greg Jennings off the board?
Yeah, exactly. I know Greg Jennings is, you know, a little long in the tooth and basically handing the number one position over to Patterson, but he's still going to put up fantasy numbers. Yeah, we talked about this 100 times, Rick and I. They're basically in an arms race in the NFC North right now, and Minnesota is in fourth place when it comes to the offense, and they're going to have to air it out. I swear they are. I mean, Peterson is not going to be able to keep up with these offenses all by himself.
No, he's not. And like you said, they're going to have to get Peterson in space. Like, all the things that North Turner does, they're going to be able to do. They do have some pieces. But, you know, the quarterback situation, they still have a young man in Bridgewater, not to mention the fact that, you know, it's Matt Castle. I mean, he'll be on the bench by week 7 or 8. So basically, the situation dictates to what can Bridgewater do to keep the defense honest enough to free up Peterson and also get some good distance in that passing game.
All right, no question about it. Well, Corey, we've about running out of time here. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us tonight. It was great to talk to you again. Why don't you take a second and tell everybody where they can find your work?
Just follow me on Twitter at the Fantasy Exec. That's at TheFantasyExec at the Fantasy Exec on Twitter. Thanks a lot, fellas.
Tell you what, Corey, it's always a pleasure to have you in here, and you know, I hope we get you back in here, if not before the season starts, at least during the season.
Oh, yeah, I hope I didn't get too much, you know, give y'all too much propaganda. You know what I mean? But you know, we should do all right.
Just the right amount of propaganda. I've taken furious notes this show, and I'm expecting it to pay big dividends, and I will hold you personally responsible if it all goes sideways on me. So to get back to that Johnny Manziel lifestyle of yours, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, thanks, fellas.
All right, thanks, Corey. All right, Rick, that's Corey Parsons, Roto Experts in the Morning producer, but spends a lot of time on the air, and just a guy, Rick, I've said it before, I listened to Corey read the phone book. This guy, a wealth of knowledge, this is what he does for a living, and Rick, he's starting to turn me, you know, Dennis could never convince me, you brought up his name, Corey's starting to convince me, I want to maybe look at that receiver position.
I'm starting to twitch that
even
way
you,
myself.
Even
Barry.
You, and I can see it pains you, your forehead's all red. You don't like it, but...
But bear in mind, I told you, you know, I was doing that auction league
right
last week, which you well know because
yeah.
I actually had to
yeah,
do
you drafted
your team
my
team too.
For me, too, as I'm a world traveler.
I got Brandon Marshall,
okay.
Roddy White, Michael Crabtree.
Wow.
Brian Hartline. You know, of course, I got Hartline late, but I got those three right there. I loaded up. I got Crabtree as my wide receiver three. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it's not a bad spot to be in. And yeah, Corey makes a point. I still feel better having that stud running back. Where Corey and Dennis, we'll give Dennis some credit too because he's been arguing this with us for 2 years now. Where I see it is we talk about as I make it all about me consistently is when you're picking, you know, I don't know about Calvin Johnson or any of those guys at two. You're going to have a hard time convincing me of that. But sitting where I'm at seven, we keep talking about that spot, 7, 8, 9. I feel like I'm reaching for every running back, Rick. Arian Foster is a guy I'm interested there. It's a guy I have ranked there, but I can get him later in the second round.
I got him cheap in the auction league.
Right.
And that was one of my of course, it's a little different than your redraft, obviously,
right.
But, you know, I got Arian Foster, Ben Tate, and Joyt Bell fairly cheap.
Right.
I could spend the money on the Brandon Marshall and the
right.
Roddy White. I didn't have to spend that much on Roddy White because there's not that many believers out
right.
there.
Right, and get back to your redraft. There's questions about Monty Ball. There's questions about Marshawn Lynch. There's questions about Arian Foster. Do you have any question about Demaryius Thomas?
No.
Do you have any question about Dez Bryant?
No.
That's my mindset, where my mindset's turning. I don't want to force the running back issue when there is questions to after everybody after Eddie Lacy, there's a question mark.
Right.
There. So
yeah, it's sound strategy. It really is. And like I said, uh-oh, cramping again. Yeah, my head's turning.
I know it killed you. You look like you got an exorcist thing going. I can see you hovering out of your chair. It's driving you nuts. It goes against everything you believe in, but it's time to have the conversation.
Anyhow. It really is, and it's, you know, I tell you what, I'm starting to turn here.
All right, Rick. Well, we are out of time. We didn't mention it off the top. We wanted to get right to Corey, but as you can tell, we're dropping the weekly show back to an hour. I think the 90 minutes got a little cumbersome as we continually experiment with ways to get you the most and best quality of content. We feel like a 60-minute show, obviously, we're going to run a little over here. It won't be a hard hour, but going to back it down a little bit. So thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate it, Rick. Those numbers heading way up right now, and we appreciate that as the season gets near. Keep those questions coming. We're getting lots of them at Asylum Football, and then whatever those email addresses you're always talking
AsylumFootball at gmail.com and AsylumFantasySports at gmail.com.
Right. Check us out Sundays, Rick. Now it looks like we're on 6 p.m. on Sunday on the Fantasy Sports Network. FantasySportsNetwork.com, MPS Cable,
and apparently
Canada,
11 as well.
Replayed at 11 and also Channel 147 in the New York area, Cablevision Optimum Package. So check that out on Sunday, 6 and or 11. You can listen to both. It's the same show, but it's that damn good.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, we'll be back next Wednesday. Rick heading to the Hall of Fame this weekend.
Right, man. We're going to be covering the induction ceremony, the Hall of Fame game. And, you know, the post-game activities and a roundtable discussion, a few other things. And hopefully we'll have some interesting things besides us getting the bracelet slapped on us and carried off.
Well, it'll be one of two good things. We either have some great audio for you from the Hall of Fame ceremonies or a great story about us going to prison. Either way, you're not going to want to miss next week, 7 o'clock, AsylumFantasySports.com, RFSportsRadio.com, and Blog Talk Radio. Until then, we'll see you.
Take care.
All right, that ended abruptly, Rick. I don't know what happened there.
What did you do, just go off?
Yep, Mikkel, I don't know what happened to you, buddy. You know, you were on a roll, so I'll say it again. We'll see you.